Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Spanis, and I'm guest hosting the LaRouche Show today, May 29th, 2010. The topic that we've chosen for this show, but this will just be a takeoff point, is why is BP being protected? The answer, we suggest, is because President Barack Obama is a traitor. But we will be exploring the ins and outs of the political situation in the country at large, Mr. Obama's situation, and how that is connected with the disaster which he is protecting in the Gulf. We have two guests today. We're doing a switcheroo, and our guest here in the studio is Marcia Baker, who is an economics editor for Executive Intelligence Review, and will be dealing with the BP question, which she has looked into in some detail, and has some considerable background on, having some geology in your background, I believe, Marcia.
Coal in Pennsylvania, but it's all the same fossils.
Right. Now, and our second guest, we're very pleased to have a representative of the Boston campaign of Rachel Brown. This is Miles Robinson, and he's on the line with us from the Boston office. Hi, Miles.
Hi, Nancy.
So, we had some very significant news development. We're going to start with Boston because this week on Thursday, Rachel Brown filed her petitions to be on the ballot for Congress. She will be in the primary, I believe it's September 14th, against Barney Frank. I don't know if there's anybody else snuck onto the ballot to try to screw up the confrontation, but you'll let us know. And this is an extremely, it's an inflection point in a campaign that's been going on since January, and I'd like to get a reading from Miles as to what the situation looks like up there in this budding mass strike.
Well, I mean, it's a really optimistic picture. The situation with getting petition signatures was at times rather difficult for us because the Attorney General here, Martha Coakley, the candidate against Scott Brown as a Democrat for the Senate seat, people might know her name, she actually tried to shut us down in many different ways from getting signatures from the population. They much would have rathered that we were not on the ballot. They wanted to keep us from going out with the mustache and making comparisons to Obama and Nazism. And they were really, I mean, they were out to shut down the campaign, and we kind of proved with an exclamation point that the population is ready to get Obama out of office. The Democratic Party is ready to move on this guy by filing 4,100 plus signatures when only 2,000 was needed to secure a place on the ballot. And on the Democratic ticket next to Barney Frank's name is going to be Rachel Brown, and only Rachel Brown.
Great.
There are some Republicans in the race who generally have no policies.
Right.
So we are going to be leading a fight starting now and starting really back even through the period where we were fighting to get Rachel on the ballot, of leading the population towards a solution of how to actually deal with this financial crisis, to deal with the fact that Obama is a British puppet, which this situation that we'll be discussing today down in the Gulf is a real example of, and that we'll be on the streets. We really are kind of the ground troops of LaRouche's mobilization to get these bums out of office. And we plan on doing just that. But the process leading up to the election, I think, is going to be just as powerful and serious politically and impactful as actually getting Rachel into the U.S. Congress.
I don't know.
Mobilization that I think is going to have kind of a real, it's going to display for people what we really are as a political movement. So we are the revolution that has to take over this nation, and we have to inspire that in the American people. It's no longer just about elections, and that's what this campaign is going out very strong with, especially with our criticism of Scott Brown, who was voted in by the mass strike and the population and voted to protect State Street Bank and the British bankers that have called Boston home for over 300 years.
Right. Just to recollect for people, of course, Rachel is part of a three-person national slate of LaRouche candidates who announced earlier this year, I believe it was in January or early February, with the explicit intent, as Miles just reiterated, to change policy now, prior to the elections in November, to force a situation where the policies of the Glass-Steagall reform, the alliance with Russia, China, and India for a four-power agreement were pushed through in the middle of the situation now because we can't afford to wait. In fact, as we are everyone should be very much aware, in light of that supposed blip on the computer screen of a 1,000-point drop in the stock market, we are in seconds away, in fact, at any particular point from a blowout of the world financial system. This is the reality which most people, and especially in Congress, and especially Barney Frank, want to avoid. But this slate of candidates, Rachel up there in Boston, Keisha Rogers in the NASA district of Texas, who won her primary election in March and will be in the ballot in November, and Summer Shields in Nancy Pelosi's district in California, are together representing a leadership for the country as a whole as to mobilizing the population, pointing the direction of what must be done now as policy direction. Not presenting it to Congress to do it, but presenting it to the American people to enforce what must be done. Now, I wanted to further ask you, Miles, about the way things have been going up there. I understand you have a particular mode that you're using in Boston to address the patriotic impulse of the people of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, if people have been watching the LPAC website, they probably saw that the Two Massachusetts video was very prominently featured for quite some time. And if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. Find it on the archives of LPAC TV. It's about a 20-minute historical documentary, which really goes through how the British Empire in the 1680s, with roots even earlier, tried to destroy what became the United States of America in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, led by John Winthrop and the Mathers and other significant individuals that Graham Lowry documents in his excellent book that EIR published called How the Nation Was Won. And if people haven't read that, definitely check that out. But what the spirit around Boston really typifies is this current of what the Mathers and John Winthrop really embodied, which is a Republican form of government, of self-governance for a population who really sees themselves as made in the image of the Creator, people who think big. And that spirit is what eventually spilled over into the American Revolution and created the documents of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. It's this tradition that really started in Massachusetts, that what became the United States of America that Lyndon LaRouche today really historically falls back on and really represents as a political figure today. But then, of course, like everything good that comes out of humanity, the oligarchy and the empire comes in and tries to destroy it. And Boston was no different. Around the 1680s, a little bit earlier, you had motions with inside Boston to crush the Republican spirit of the population. The, you know, not just the policies, the charter, the public credit policy, the pine tree shilling, and some other things that were used by the colonists here in order to create a society, but they deployed to kill the actual spirit within the population. And they did that through the dope trade, the slave trade, the big financial banks, the Lowells, the Cabots, the Lodges, the big Boston Brahmin families, which basically straight from London, straight from the British Empire, deployed into the heart of Boston to try to subvert the operation. And if you go downtown Boston today, you see financial houses with these names etched in stone above them.
Really? In
there's
stone?
A real living tradition of finance here in Boston, which is directly connected to the British imperial drug trade and other nasty elements of this derivative bubble, which has propped up in the last decade or so. Boston has become a major center of that.
I understand the State Street Bank that Scott Brown moved to support has to have a Cabot or a Lodge on its board or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. I know that there has been one sitting on their board for the last decade. And yeah, no, I do think that there is a provision in place that, I mean, these are the families that have run the city. This is the Fondi mentality of the Venetians, that there's one big pool of money and this one family or these two families are going to be in control of it. And that money has literally been used to wage warfare, Menticide and others in the form of drug trade, against a population that was really thinking big, thinking from a standpoint of how do we advance Judeo-Christian civilization in a way away from the European oligarchical tradition here in the United States that can actually form a true republic in the Platonic sense. Mm-hmm. And that was the fight, and the enemy was very clear as the British Boston Brahmin faction. And, you know, we're intersecting that this is not some antiquated historical fight which we can read about in a textbook or something, but this is a real social dynamic that exists here in Massachusetts. And you know, we saw it with the Scott Brown vote. There is a tendency to kiss the butt of this British imperial class from the elected officials, especially baby boomers, here in Massachusetts, even if they have no business doing it, and their political allegiance should lie within the population. So we're going out explicitly with this, and we're the only political force out there which actually has a real understanding of how we can use this to get the population to wake up and support us, and it's working.
The Patriots are moving toward Rachel Brown, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very explicit. We're running into it every single time we deploy. Mm-hmm. And it's a flank which you can only really understand from the standpoint of LaRouche's conception of historical dynamics, that there is something playing on the minds of the population that they might not be entirely aware of, but that if we tap into it in the right way and we give people a sense of exactly what we're fighting for, there's going to be a response. Because this patriotic tradition here in Massachusetts really is in the bones. It's in the Boston accent. You know,
that's right.
The city is as rich with historical fight. Mm-hmm. And that's what you get. I mean, even if you just take a tour of Boston, you get a sense that this is a city which is rich in a historical fight. It's not that we have beautiful buildings or we're not some theme park or something like this.
Or that you have a marathon every year or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's not about the tourist attractions. It's about the fact that history was actually made here.
Right.
It took people to get out of their beds in the morning and fight like hell to make sure that it actually manifested.
Yeah.
And it did. And we got the United States as a result of it.
Right.
And everything that came out of that. So that's what we're using almost as a weapon. We're going out to the population with these ideas, and the response has been very very definite, mm-hmm. either for or against us. And I think that indicates that we're really fighting the right fight.
Right. Of course, the enemy also has to feel rather surrounded. We did find out this week that the famous confrontation that Rachel had with Barney Frank last fall or summer, I forget when it was exactly, where she confronted him on the Nazi nature of Obama's health care and he made an ass out of himself, has been has gone viral to the point that over 1.4 million people have viewed that video. So Rachel is a famous antagonist for telling the truth in a very public way, and I think that that's is only going to help us in this overall fight, because she is, of course, now a national and international figure fighting for the American system in this way. Okay, so this is May 29th, the LaRouche Show. Our chief topic, pre-advertised, was on the atrocity in the Gulf of Mexico, the BP scandal. And I want to turn to our guest here in the studio, Marcia Baker, to give us some of the lay of the land of what we're really looking at here as a demonstration of the political nature of this president and of the entity which led to this disaster.
Well, I can do that. I can set the stage for people making their own quick decision about that by discussing some of the literal physical side of this disaster. Tomorrow's the 40th day since the first explosion on this rig in the Gulf of Mexico. And there is no question there was criminal negligence beforehand by British Petroleum and associated companies during the immediate hours of the event itself and when the rig finally sank 2 days later. And since then, that's a question you can take up as criminal negligence or just on the scales of justice historically, the non-action of the federal government, the President Obama, in dealing with the cleanup and contingency measures for what's unfolding, and it is huge. So let me just sketch that out.
Right.
Because first, just take it by narrative, in the lead-up to this, what was the first drilling that was taking place in this BP-leased offshore land. It was Transocean, a company. It's really the biggest company in the world that does this kind of thing, has these rigs. They're made in Korea and elsewhere, that was leased by British Petroleum to, hired by British Petroleum to do the drilling. So what happened is over, you had a situation where the staffing was understaffed on this rig. This didn't just
too much money, right?
That's it. And it didn't just take place a few months ago. When early in 2001, 2003, I forget when the rig came over from Korea, take all of its different categories of crew. I think its engine room should have 6 people. It did when it was flagged under Panama. Then it went down to 3 when it was reflagged in the Marshall Islands.
Oh, wow, really?
Because they have more lax requirements.
Right. Now, remember, I wondered why it was, you know, this is offshore more ways than one. It's an offshore licensed company in order to get around regulations. And this administration, as well as previous ones, has gone along with that.
Exactly. So you get this rig there. It's floating. It isn't. You've got a situation where you're having to go down 5,000 feet. That's not the deepest well in the world or even in the Gulf, but that's deep. That's deep water. And then they were drilling down another 13,000 feet, boring into bedrock in the ocean floor. So you got an 18,000-foot pipe here that you're dealing with. It's 41 to 50 miles off the coast of Louisiana. And to reiterate, British Petroleum was leasing this drill platform operation. And they had a timetable when they wanted it completed and then temporarily capped. Then they'd come in and do commercial pumping. So they were in a rush. They were over budget. British Petroleum was over what it felt it was its budget. They were over schedule. The drilling crew was under pressure weeks before the accident to kind of make up for lost time because an initial drilling effort had been done with too much speed and didn't work out right. So in early April or in mid-April, when they had completed this 18,000-foot pipe and so forth, was the time period in which they would be wanting to withdraw from the situation temporarily mm-hmm. and take proper measures. None of them were taken properly.
Wow.
And I'll just summarize them. I just want to say today, even in Louisiana, the hearings are taking place where the kind of thing I'm describing is coming out every day. They've been going on since for over a week.
Right.
And this is before the Coast Guard and before a division of the Department of Interior called Minerals Management Service. But the point is that you can just say nothing was done right. What you'd want to do, roughly speaking, is you've got this big long hole. You have a big apparatus, a multi-ton apparatus down near the ocean floor, which is called a blowout protector.
Right.
Well, that had some electrical and other problems, activation problems. It was known in advance, and they weren't dealt with. And there was no fail-safe, no redundancy on how to activate that. It never did get activated, by the way.
Oh, it didn't?
No,
huh.
It didn't
activate. Okay.
Or if it did, it didn't function for reasons that should have been known in advance and corrected. You know, maybe we can come back to that. You were to withdraw, you would be wanting to make sure the well wasn't out of control when you temporarily left it, meaning it wasn't sending up gas and oil in a surge or
right.
a kick, as they
right.
call it. So you were always trying to keep a pressure downward through putting in this drilling fluid that's known as mud.
Mm-hmm.
And you would want to keep that pressure while you then put some temporary cement plugs in the right place. So the pressure checking, which Schlumberger has something to do with, wasn't done as frequently or as reliably as you would want. The cement plugs at that depth, you put some down below, and then eventually, I guess, you put one up higher. They, in being put in, they are put in by the cement people or the Halliburton people. We've heard them in the last decade,
yes,
have we not?
They have been known to cut a few corners and say and destroy a few lives.
And be protected in government agencies like
right.
Dick Cheney, George Soltz, Felix Wright. We could go into that.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, they were putting in some cement, and to get it to dry fast, they put a nitrogen element connected to it. But in deep water rather than shallow water, you're not too sure if everything worked. So you'd want to be extra careful,
right.
double-check your cement.
Right.
Have some, and you're using cement elsewhere, also around the casing of the pipe. And you want to make sure that all works, because, again, you've got 5,000 feet of water here and the cement.
And how many people were actually on the rig? Do you
About know? 126,
uh-huh.
over 120, as you know, and many were injured. 11 died.
Right.
So I'm just describing the situation in which, and there was during the hours leading up to the April 20th major events of several explosions, everything wasn't in place. All the pressure checks, all the cement bonding and so forth wasn't triple checked. All the fact of the blowout protector not being totally the way it should. All of this took place. And then in addition, you had a terrible drama of the British Petroleum Company man, as they call him. He's the boss
right.
at the time. They're the ones that have the lease. They're hiring Transocean. This gentleman overrode some drilling experts there who didn't want to remove yet the heavy drilling fluid, that is the mud. They wanted to keep the pressure.
Which controls the pressure, right?
Exactly, until everything for sure. But the company man said, do it, we're okay, everything's all right, just go to salt water, get it out of here, make ready to be leaving so we can make up
right.
for time. And a surge of a surge of hydrocarbons ensued, had an explosion, eventually set the thing on fire. People had to jump ship.
Right.
And the whole thing. In fact, a 23-year-old young crew member is the one that issued the mayday.
Wow.
Who had no authority to do so and was reprimanded on the spot while everybody was jumping into the water,
God.
Into lifeboats. So this is I'm just being indicative there. This isn't deep research. This
right.
is, this is all there.
This is all obvious on the surface. And the way Lynn LaRouche put it when we were discussing this is, look, you've got to realize how the British bastards think. The British bastards think, We are going to go in and extract whatever we need to get the amount of profit that we need. We're going to, if I mean, it's possible they paid people off to, in terms of inspectors and so forth, but we also know that they have a history of this. We know about the 2005 refinery blowout in Houston, after which a lot of material came forward from private memos from the risk management division of BP saying, well, you know, we have a sort of calculus as to how much we're willing to spend to avoid the risk for our workers. And, you know, maybe we count in one of the memos the value of a human life, about $10 million. And, you know, if it's going to cost more than that, then it's not really worth it. This is how the British bastards think. And the reality is that's the way the Obama administration, which is run by policy and by inclination by the British, also thinks.
Right. There is there sometimes there's a superficial finger pointing to say, well, it was the Bush administration that set this in motion. They didn't have the regulations. True, they didn't.
Right.
Now the Obama administration doesn't have the regulations. True, they don't.
Yeah, right.
But in fact, it's the imperial penetration in our institutions in this country over the last 30 or 40 years, roughly speaking, in the Interior Department, the Agriculture Department, whether it comes to mineral safety, coal mines, offshore drilling, food safety, that where you have foods coming here from 2,000 miles away.
Right.
So what kind of safety do you expect to have? Yes, we're dealing with a classic situation that was really the responsibility is in the BP boardroom in London. That doesn't mean they had to be on the phone in the last minutes.
Absolutely.
Or online or texting
mm-hmm.
to be responsible for this. And so the record, you mentioned one thing in 2005. There are many with BP operates in at least 12 principal nations in the world. And they're certainly, speaking of shifts in the world, they're taking a second look up on the Russian North Slope and in many other parts of the world. But they, in the United States, they had the 2006, the Prudhoe Bay oil release of 200,000 gallons of crude oil on Alaska's North Slope. They hadn't looked for corrosion in their pipes up there for 14 years.
14 years? Wow, so, I guess they were still making money, huh?
That's it. So that's all. You talk about criminal negligence, criminal misdemeanor. It's all there, courtroom style. It's all coming together.
Right.
But of course, what we're talking about here is this is taking place in the eyes of the country. It's throwing the spotlight on the whole, actually it's centuries of British looting policy as a matter of course that you already raised and Miles raised. And that's what we're up against here. Now, let me just say one thing about how this shows up in not taking action, contingency action to do the best you can once something like this happened. Because certainly we should, I think on Tuesday it would be great to have an announcement we're nationalizing BP America. It would be surgical. It would be okay.
Right.
You can do that as a corporate action.
Right. In fact, the first statement that Lyndon LaRouche made about this is bankrupt them, shut them down, get them out of here. And this is being echoed now by other Democrats as well because they've really had it, you know, with the kind of blasé attitude that or arrogance that BP is indicating. BP is saying, well, we're a partner of the United States. Well, you know, you're no partner. You're a saboteur of the United States, and you're out of here and paying for absolutely everything that can be done. And we're going to war against the crime which you committed, not only against you, but as one of the people down in New Orleans said just the other day, he said, or maybe it was Grand Isle, one of the areas right on the coast there, we should be waging war. We should be bringing in our naval resources. We should be bringing in we should be accepting the offers. I know you looked this up, Marcia. Offers have been made by, what, 17 countries?
Right. That those per, that's exactly the what anyone who is thinking, get all the ships, get all the help, get all the protective gear, get everything you can. In other words, wage war. Now, here's what hasn't happened, just to underscore what you're saying about Obama and his relationship to the boardrooms of London. What hasn't happened is to accept 17 countries, as I say, offer different things. Only Mexico, Canada, and Norway have been accepted so far by the combination of what the is called the Unified Command, the different U.S. agencies in working with BP. Naturally, it's great to have help from Norway. They're the old Viking engineers. They are experts at marine engineering. But you would want many vessels out there. For one thing, you only have maybe BP and President Obama says, oh, we have 1,300 out there. Big deal. Let's get 2,000. Let's get 3,000.
Right.
And as the people are saying on the islands in the bayous of Louisiana, instead of saying, if you want, we'll look and whether your boat, take any boat. Someone wants to volunteer. Let's have youth brigades come down. This is for handling the boom, you know, having the absorbent materials. You can have different kinds to protect the slick as it would otherwise roll in, because it's affected over 70 miles of the Louisiana coastline now, and that's increasing. And you also just don't have Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida. You have other characteristics of this spill that's out of control. There's a sighting in the last 24 hours of a plume going northwest from the spill headed towards Texas.
Wow.
This is mostly underwater. That's the point. You don't see the slick on the surface.
Right.
So back to just summarize the areas. You would want this kind of absorbent boom for protection. You need a lot of vessels to take care of this and do this kind of thing. You need shoreline cleanup. You need a lot of people. Why not?
Right.
You need to settle this catfight that's going on about dispersant, because sometimes you want to use it, sometimes you don't want to break up the oil as a slick. But bring the scientists together and deal with it. It's merely been a fight between BP and the and Lisa Jackson, the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, neither of whom you can trust.
No, absolutely not.
So as Miles said, we're taking policy to the people, or bringing it out, or we're not trying to lobby Congress or Lisa Jackson or someone.
Right.
Because they've been hopeless on this.
Absolutely. I mean, the point that Lyndon LaRouche was making earlier today is, look, you know, Obama is, this BP incident is the occasion for a paradigm shift occurring with the Obama administration in the eyes of the American people. This already had taken off in a qualitative way after Obama's intervention to prevent the passage of the Glass-Steagall Amendment to the Dodd Bill. Lynn said it at the time. He said, look, if the Senate kowtows to this, they are discredited. We are now in a revolutionary situation where the people are going to have to impose. No one's going to trust anything they do. That has occurred. That kind of shift, we had some indications of this since that vote, which was on the 20th of May, in activity in Trenton, New Jersey, with a mass rally against budget cuts, even more significant San Francisco, where Obama himself pulled together the most disparate group of people that's ever met on the streets of San Francisco to demonstrate against him as an individual, as a tyrant, as a someone who is willing to implement British genocidal policy against the American population without blinking an eye. You know, Mr. Cool, right, carrying out British imperial policy. So this mood was already in the works, and now this, the atrocity of the lack of action by this administration, being totally unwilling to take charge to protect the people, has been the occasion for new impetus for people seeing Obama has to go. This guy is a traitor to the United States by any sense of responsibility to our current generation and to future generations. We see it day by day. Every day that he's in office, he represents a clear and present danger to the welfare of the United States. And therefore, BP does indicate not only a real physical problem, you know, it's going to destroy a whole lot of our seafood capability, as far as I can see, as well as the livelihoods of these people. But this is an impetus. It's not a cause. It's an impetus for us accelerating the impeachment drive among the population of the United States.
Right. I wonder, Miles, did you, just in recent days, does this particular unfolding of this disaster in the Gulf come up in the form of people relating it to Obama as just not doing anything?
Or a British agent?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very clear pedagogy that this guy is a British asset. And for him to run down to Louisiana and blame it on the federal government is totally absurd. The population for the last few weeks, we had a fundraiser here last weekend, and it was a topic of discussion there. Uh-huh. Among myself and a contact who showed up. I mean, people, and this was in, you know, New Bedford, where there's a big fishing fleet, and they were talking there about how, you know, we could be sending the fishing fleet down from New Bedford. James Carville mentioned that they could be sending ships from Woods Hole, which is way up here in Massachusetts, an oceanographic institute.
Yeah, a scientific center.
Yeah, and they
right?
could deal with this dispersant instead of have the, in other words, the scientific expertise there as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, we should be having a massive campaign to pump this stuff out. And the population is getting a sense that everyone's kind of sitting on their hands and feasibility studies are being done while the situation is verging on a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying that, and in another area, immediately that this shows up, on the question, since it was known the way the currents were taking the slick towards the Louisiana, you know, the 41 miles, it was May 11th that the Louisiana authorities appealed to the appropriate federal ones for the right to go ahead and use all the dredges to build up sand islands, sand berms along, just for protection in the
right.
to where they're
to
appropriate.
To absorb, right?
Or to just prevent. These
uh-huh.
were actually one of the locations had the plans ready to go, because after Katrina they developed some plans for emergency. It's like artificial sandbars to keep to prevent surges of from hurricanes.
Right.
And so, but this sat on people's desks in Washington for 2 weeks. This isn't just that there was a quibbling debate over maybe we shouldn't intervene and put. It went nowhere. So
right.
as Miles said about President Obama yesterday, blabbing away, we have 22,000 people work. Well, where were they? I mean, they're inland. They're somewhere. And we need multiples of that. We could have brigades from all over the place.
Right.
And from the Great Lakes, all the expertise, get people out of retirement, send them down. Let me add one thing here, just by way of what's coming ahead on this, because it isn't just the objective situation that does it, but the objectively terrible situation that's underway there, combined with the mood of the country,
absolutely
adds up to something special in history.
Right.
Now, as about 20% of the area of the Gulf is off limits to fishing now, and that will be increased the more they find these underwater currents of
right.
oil,
right.
which haven't been so apparent. So the overflights and the research ships are working on it now. You're right about the seasonal. The high percentage of U.S. seasonal seafood of certain fresh kinds, 40% comes from there at certain times of the year.
Right.
So that just isn't going to happen, and it's just destructive. But with this degree of underwater movement of the oil slick where they don't know, and the length of time involved where something might be done to contain this, it's unprecedented. The particulars of that are the following. You know, they have this operation called Top Kill now, where they, from the top, they just want to try and kill the whale. That's the
right,
way to look
right,
at it.
Right.
And they are pumping in some of this heavy fluid. They were able to do that from the at high pressure, this mud, into the main bore or into this broken down protector, blowout protector. And they're adding this debris,
right?
This junk of all kinds, hoping to plug it up. And they do it some. They have to watch the pressure so they don't rupture the pipe they're putting the mud into.
Right.
So if that's 60 or 70% going to work, okay, we hope so. I mean, we don't. But otherwise, among the other things, they'll just try again with one of these containment coffer domes or coffer dams. The other one failed and is on the ocean floor there. And that'll take a while, I don't know, weeks or something. And otherwise, the two relief wells, as they're called, they are drilling.
Right.
And hoping then to tap into it somehow and
right.
cut off the main flow and have a controlled flow. The first of that won't be done until August.
Right.
So there we are. That's the objective side.
Right.
In which every hour of not doing anything from Nantucket, from Woods Hole, from San Francisco, from
right.
San Diego, from the Seabees, from the Navy, from the Army Corps.
From perhaps Russia, China, other places that have gone into this kind
That's
of activity
right.
all over the world who have done tremendous work on metallurgical is the word I'm thinking.
Right.
On fossil fuels is absolutely critical. This is an international emergency for our biosphere, and I think many people see that, and they look at what's going on from the so-called President of the United States, or the person that Lynn called this week, the British whore called the President of the United States, and begin to get a sense of what this guy represents. Let me just take a second in terms of station identification here. This is May 29th, the LaRouche Show. You can reach our sponsor is Executive Intelligence Review. I'm Nancy Spanis, the editor of that weekly internet magazine. You can reach EIR at 800-278-3135. We're on the air at 3 o'clock Eastern every week. We have a couple events coming up to highlight here. In particular, June 26th, Ms. Lyndon LaRouche will be giving his next international webcast. This will be quite crucial, coming at the point of the building of the mass strike revolutionary mood in the American population. This is going to be quite a month of June. Coming up, in even barring a sudden collapse in the global financial system, we have the physical collapse here in the United States being reflected in local budget cuts and shutting of schools and shutting of hospitals and breakdowns of water systems and so forth. And people are not in the mood to sit back and take it right now, as we saw in the recent period in New Jersey and Detroit in particular. So that June 26th, mark your calendar, 1 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon. We will not be having a LaRouche show. You don't have to trade off on that day, but mark your calendar on that. And then next week, our regular host, Harley Schlanger, will be moderating a discussion particularly timed for Robert Schumann's birthday. That's June 8th. Oh, no, June 5th. Schumann's birthday is June 8th. And that will be extremely appropriate to address some of the crucial cultural shifts that we need here in the United States in order to get us back to that kind of thinking of the Winthrops and the Mathers and the classical culture, which really did form our nation. That's why we took the best from Europe. We got the best from Europe because they were anxious to get away from that oligarchical suppression and were able to build something that could not be built there. But it's a universal culture in the sense that it represents the best Republican ideas that mankind has ever been able to achieve. And we share that around the world. And we have to reintroduce our population, which has been inundated with British empiricism increasingly, I mean, both from the end of the 19th century, but increasingly since the death of Franklin Roosevelt, and has therefore become very small-minded. So Harley will be taking up that celebration, probably in its musical and historical aspects, next week. So, okay, back to where we stand with the situation politically right now. I'm sure you have more thoughts, Marcia.
Well, I have a question. I get to throw that in here, and I want to tell all our regular emailers and others that Larry Hecht, who we said would be here from 21st Century Science and Technology, he is writing on Deadline on this whole BP situation, and it will be an EIR online.
Yes, absolutely.
In the next one to be posted.
Right.
So that's why I'm here.
And you can call that number, 800-278-3135, and you can subscribe to that magazine.
Nancy, I just wanted to ask you, when we here are in the critical front of a shift for the whole world. What's going to happen here in the United States? But elsewhere around the world, right? I think London is on the defensive. Would you say something about that?
Yeah, sure. They sure are. As I was referencing before, we are we never did anything to contain the blowout of the financial system that occurred in 2007, 2008. A whole lot of money was poured into it. But for the financial oligarchy centered in London to make that stick, they have to crush the political will and nations all around the world. And they've been unable to do so. And they are in a desperate situation right now because they are insisting, it's being insisted from London, that Europe and the United States continue to hyperinflate, to bail out those bankrupt banks over there, and that they crush their populations with fascist austerity, starting in Greece, proceeding to Spain, Portugal, and coming to the United States. That's what all this discussion of a fiscal commission and so forth is all about. We call it a fascist commission. That's the whole point. They haven't been able to do it. The mass strike ferment here in the United States gives them pause. There are echoes of this in Germany and France. Just the Germany has been quite remarkable in the past week to 10 days to clamp down on these naked short selling derivatives, which London and including Geithner and Obama have been defending to the hilt, but they say, no, we're going to shut down this speculation. It's an attack on our people. And having been unable to clamp down on this, other things are beginning to spurt out of control. For example, the latest situation, which Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing over the last couple of days, is that in Spain. Now, many people will recall that when the so-called Greek crisis blew, the first thing that LaRouche said was, this isn't a Greek crisis, it's a Spain crisis. And it's a Spain crisis. A Spain crisis is immediately a British crisis because Spain, and particularly its key banks, Banco Santander and BBVA, are basically just shills for the British Empire and the Inter-Alpha group of banks established back in 1971 and used as a political and financial operation for global looting and globalization. So Spain is, they so-called took care of the Greek problem, but Spain is blowing up. They are in a totally untenable situation in their real estate market. Sound familiar? Their state bonds were just downgraded, not a lot, but on the process at the end of last week. They've trying to implement the same kind of massive austerity programs that were done in Greece in Spain, they're running into interference because people don't like it. The labor unions don't like it. And the situation is going to explode. It's not at all clear that they're going to be able to get the bailout of the InterAlpha network of banks, which is what these bailouts are, not a bailout of any country. Anyone who's listening who may have been brainwashed into believing that these kind of bailouts are actually for the people of the countries of Europe or the Third World prior to that has just been totally deluded. These are for the banks. Usually they don't go out of the city of London or New York. It goes from one bank account to the other. So this is the British are desperate. The more frantic they get, the more likely they are to do something insane, of course, like set off Netanyahu to do something against Iran or set off this North Korea situation, which very interesting, because there's no evidence the North Koreans actually fired that torpedo against the South Korean ship, and today they presented a whole long defense of themselves. LaRouche said from the very beginning, smells to me the only people interested in creating what is really the closest thing to a massive military blow-up on the globe, is this North-South Korea situation. It had to have been the British. They're the only ones interested in doing that. So they're frantic. Our strategic situation, however, the way we have to see that is knock out their chief asset. Who's their chief asset? President Obama. He is the guy who, once knocked out, gives us a clear shot to destroy the British Empire all the way through. That's why LaRouche has emphasized the positive aspect of getting the Glass-Steagall reform, Roosevelt's principle, through here first, and why we have to eliminate the barriers to that, and the primary one of which is Obama remaining in office. This has to escalate hand in glove, both from the standpoint of the political destruction of Obama, safely, nicely, constitutionally, out of there, and the fight for the programmatic future, the future of economic development, which we have to, which we can promise our people in the world once we get this out of the way.
Right, BP, British Protector. We're going to get them out of the way.
Yeah, right. Right. So.
Yeah, and on that solution front of how we need to organize, there's an exciting new arm of our campaign for Glass-Steagall, uh-huh. which is up on our website, and this gets at what a lot of our supporters are kind of asking as a perpetual question. Well, what more can I do? How do I actually help push these policies through? Well, go on the LPAC website and look at this resolution that we've drafted for Glass-Steagall implementation. This is coming off of the wake of the Senate killing a policy which the majority of the Senate supported and 87% of the American people support. Go to your city council, go to your state house, get these local political leaders to do something which sends a reverberative message into Washington in a way that will dramatically shift the way in which the situation is developing. When you do have a patriotic impulse in the people around McCain and Cantwell with this Glass-Steagall mobilization, we need to escalate on that in a way which is actually going to work, which isn't going to be kissing the butt of the Senate, but it's going to be actually getting the American people to fight for their local leadership to fight for a national policy that will actually work. And from that standpoint, we can vector the work of the mass strike into something which will actually completely transform the situation which they're reacting against. I mean, as we saw in San Francisco, for example, everybody was protesting their own little thing outside of this Obama event. And it's indicative of the way in which the population's thinking and reacting, and that there isn't anything which they're unifying around. But the Glass-Steagall question is something that they would unify around, because what unites all these people is a disgust for the bailout, a disgust for Obama's dictatorial policies, which call on consolidating the corporations and the Wall Street superpowers into something, you know, which is just obviously a British-centered imperial interest. And you get the population then fighting for something which will actually completely transform this nation and transform their lives in a way that they want to see. So I think from that standpoint, there's a lot that we can do.
Absolutely.
In the coming period, and we
and
should
just
think of all the ways in which we can move this resolution forward and other ways of helping with our efforts in that direction.
Absolutely, and I want to underscore what you said from a different standpoint. I mean, or just to make very clear that we're not talking here. We did a similar process back in 2007, 2008 around LaRouche's Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. And people, at that time, it was clear to LaRouche that people in the city councils, in the state legislatures, were willing to take actions in defense of their people and, in effect, in defense of the Constitution of the United States that people in Congress would not do. Now that situation is even more dramatic in terms of a divide. But at that time, it took us a long time. We got many, many resolutions passed, you know, over 100 jurisdictions, and introduced and discussed in many others. And it is very important to just get the solution on the table, as Miles said. You know, get the concept of Glass-Steagall there. Get the concept of eliminating derivatives. Get the whole idea of what we can do after that, which is in the New America video, which is also on the website, discussed among the population. But the fact is, we don't have the kind of, we should be careful of getting as little parliamentary as possible on this matter. People should not, you know, go to a committee and wait for the appropriate guy to set up a committee meeting to, et cetera, et cetera. We should try to avoid that, but to bring it up publicly in a meeting, right? Get a public discussion. This is an emergency resolution. It's an emergency resolution because we're in the condition that I stated before of a potential blowout at any particular time. And if the blowout comes without the protection of Glass-Steagall for the banking system of the United States, we're looking at a dark age in on very short order. So emergency resolutions, absolutely, anyone can do this. If you have any questions, there's further material on the LaRouche PAC website, further material on the LaRouche Pub. Now, I see that we're within a minute of supposedly ending this show. Do you have any final word, Marcia?
Well, I'll just say what's going to feed all this. Remember, it's the hurricane season in the Gulf. You think it's bad now. The currents and the storms and the winds just make the point that, as was said about the New England fishermen, it's clear this is what we ought to have. We ought to be manufacturing more boom. We ought to be enlisting brigades of more AmeriCorps
people. Hey, open some factories. Yeah.
That's right. And get these dredging companies from the round world who would be ready to volunteer. So it's all part of the same thing as Miles just described.
Right. So that's it for May 29th. Call 800-278-3135. Get on the website, and we will see you next week.